is last week we made that move from face-to-face church to actually doing this Facebook Live from my basement. And the reason, of course, is because of the threat of the COVID-19 virus and the distancing measures that have been taken to slow down its spread. Almost daily, it seems like we're getting new restrictions and just on both our travel and also on our meeting time together. The government has characterized this virus as the invisible enemy. And so now we find ourselves as a country at war and with an enemy that's invaded our homeland and driven us all into hiding. For most, if not all of us, our lives have been impacted by that and perhaps dramatically changed. Well, last week we started looking at another man from the Bible who found his life dramatically changed and found himself at war, fleeing and hiding from an enemy that sought to take his life. And that was, of course, David. David was anointed by God to be Israel's greatest king. But first, he had to walk through some of the lowest points in his life in order to really appreciate all that David lost as he went into hiding. We need to get a little background. We need to actually get an appreciation for that loss. And so we're going to go back to 1 Samuel chapter 18 from verse 2. Now, as always, I don't have my readers. I think Cora's going to do the reading this time. So we'll have her read, and I'll do a little bit of the commentary. So, Cora, could you read 1 Samuel 18:2?
From that day on, Saul kept David with him and wouldn't let him return home.
So, after the famous battle with Goliath and David's great victory, Saul decides that he needs to have David with him at all times. And so he forces David to move into his palace, and David's relocated from his home, and he spends his time with Saul. Go ahead and read now 1 Samuel 18, verse 1.
After David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son. There was an immediate bond between them, for Jonathan loved David.
So, while David's living in Saul's palace, he meets Saul's son, Jonathan. And there's like this immediate connection. In fact, they become best friends. Cora, go ahead and pick it up now in 1 Samuel 18, verse 5.
Whatever Saul asked David to do, David did it successfully. So Saul made him a commander over the men of war, an appointment that was welcomed by the people and Saul's officers alike.
And so now Saul gives David a job. He becomes a military officer, and a very successful one at that. Cornell, 1 Samuel 18, verse 21. Excuse me, make that 20.
In the meantime, Saul's daughter, Michal, had fallen in love with David, and Saul was delighted when he heard about it.
Saul's oldest daughter, while David's living in the palace, falls in love with David. Michal, ultimately, they end up marrying. Next, Cora, let's go to 1 Samuel 19, verse 11.
Then Saul sent troops to watch David's house. They were told to kill David when he came out the next morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't escape tonight, you will be dead by morning."
Because of David's great successes and his popularity with the people, Saul becomes insane with jealousy. He seeks to have David killed. In order to avoid that, David has to flee for his life. And so in an instant, he loses his home. He loses his job. He loses his wife. And he loses his best friend. Now, Cora, let's go to 1 Samuel 19:22.
Finally, Saul himself went to Ramah and arrived at the great well in Sekou. "Where are Samuel and David?" he demanded.
David tries to run to his longtime mentor, the prophet Samuel, the one who had anointed him. But Saul knows that that's where he might go, and so Saul pursues him to Samuel's hometown. That forces David to again flee for his life. So not only does David lose his home, his job, his wife, his best friend, and now he loses his mentor, someone he had come to depend on for encouragement and for wisdom and direction, especially in times of difficulty. In a matter of days, everything David had come to depend on is gone. David hides in a place that he was familiar with as a child. He goes to the caves outside of Bethlehem, where he grew up, specifically to the cave of Adullam. Nothing seems, guys, quite so lonely as being all alone in a deep, dark cave, knowing that everything you had come to depend on is gone.
Take a look.
Ah, they posted a picture. This is actually the cave from the inside. And you can see why it's a good hiding place. Actually, the entrance is very, very, very small. And Nicole and I were in a few of those caves when we were in Israel, outside of Bethlehem and other places. There's caves all over Israel. And the entrance is very small. You're like, oh my gosh, that looks really big, small. And once you get inside, it opens up to be a very big place. And this is one of those. And so the entrance is small and hard to find, but inside it provides great shelter. And so that's where David spends his time. Okay, but the truth is, David isn't alone in the cave. He only thinks that he is. Who else is there with him? Well, of course, God's in the cave. And when we find ourselves alone in the cave, guys, just so you know, God's in there with you as well. Now, for now, God will actually keep David alone in that cave for a while. Fast forward in ways, and we'll get to that eventually in this series. Okay, David will get back everything that he's lost and then some. He will return to the palace, but now not as a military officer, but actually as king. Michal will still be there waiting for him, along with lots and lots and lots of new friends. But first, God needs to spend some time alone with David so that he's prepared for that blessing, so he's prepared for what is about to come. Okay, it's just so you know, God needs alone time with us. Actually, we need alone time with him. Because it's only during that personal time of solitude, alone with God, that God can grow us in our relationship with him. That's where we get to the place where we really have intimacy with God. Now, guys, I'm one that I can relate to that cave time. In fact, when I came to Jesus, or should I say when Jesus came to me, knocking on the door of the cave that I was in, I was sitting in a very, very, very deep, dark place. Because of the life that I was living and the way I was treating her, Nicole left me. I really wanted her back. So after doing everything I could possibly think of, after doing everything to try to manipulate her and get her to come back, when I finally ran out of my own strength, I finally went to Jesus for help. And I was hoping that he would change things like immediately. I was hoping and thinking that, wow, once Nicole finds out that I've given my life to Christ, she'll come running back. Because, I mean, she'd been telling me for years that was what she really wanted the most. But it didn't work like that. That's not exactly what happened. In fact, she remained hard-hearted and unwilling to even give me a second chance. Although I pleaded with her, I reminded her as I started to study the Bible, it's like, Nicole, I'm a new creation in Christ. Old things have passed away, all things have become new. You got to give me another chance. But she remained hard-hearted. And from there, it only got worse. I knew that I needed to give up my old friends and my own old ways. But I thought for sure that God would replace them with new friends. I had heard that the Christians were super friendly and very welcoming. I heard they were all about community and connection and the rest of that. And so, but I experienced none of that. In fact, I even went to the pastor of the church I was going to, and I explained my situation. I'm like, I feel like I'm all alone. I need somebody to talk to. I need somebody to lean on, because I'm really falling apart. So he suggested a couple of small groups that I could go to. One was a men's group. But you know what? Nothing really came out of that. I wouldn't say they treated me like a leopard, because they weren't avoiding me. But it seemed like I was just invisible. It's like nobody really even noticed that I was there. And I was a teacher at the time. And it was summer, which means I wasn't going into work. I had no friends. Nicole wasn't talking to me. I really totally felt alone. I didn't even feel like I could leave the house. We didn't have cell phones back in those days, and so I wanted to stay pretty close to my home phone, just in case Nicole were to give me a call or maybe check in with me. And I didn't want her to go by and, or drive by and find out that I wasn't at home anyway. And so I really had no place that I could go, and I had nothing to do. And so I started reading the Bible. Actually, a lot. In fact, I read through the entire Bible in about 6 weeks. And I learned how to pray. I mean, really pray. I started talking to God. And I talked to God a lot. I begged for another chance to be like a real husband. But God was silent about that. And it seemed the more the time went by, the harder Nicole's heart became, towards me at least. I begged God for friends, godly men that I could, who would come alongside me, that I could lean on, because I really felt like my life was falling apart. And again, nothing. God was silent, or at least he seemed to be, until one day I heard from God. I heard that voice deep in my spirit, and I heard him answer. And God said, first I must become your best friend, and then others will come. Guys, God kept me alone all to himself for over 6 months. And at first, it was something that I was really afraid of. I mean, I'd never spent time alone with God. I didn't know how to talk to him. And it felt really very awkward. But little by little, it became something that I absolutely come to love. I remember at the end of the summer when I had to go back to work, how afraid I was at giving up that alone time with God, about giving up that relationship. I was worried about how that relationship would turn out when the busyness and all the distractions started to come back into my life. You know, initially, that relationship with God was kind of like a new girl in your life. You have that first date, and it feels really awkward, and you're wondering how it's going to go, and what's going to be happening, what you're going to talk about, and how that's going to become. But if you hit it off, it becomes literally this thing where you don't want to do anything else. You want to spend all your time with her. And guys, that's how it was with me. God and I really hit it off. And I love spending time with him. And I didn't want to share it with anyone else. In fact, that was the time where I really grew in intimacy with him. Later on, it became clear to me, once Nicole came back, why God had hardened her heart. It was because of the relationship that he was growing with me. He knew that if she came back into my life too soon, that I would spend all my time, my effort, and trying to repair and work on the relationship that we had, instead of growing my relationship with God. And the truth is, I was not in a position to have a relationship with Nicole until I had a real relationship with God. If she would have come back too soon, it would have gone really, really badly. And so God kept me from her as well. As much as I begged and thought and pleaded with God over that time in the cave, now as I look back on it, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. In fact, I've never been willing to give up that time ever since. I started getting up earlier in the morning. I get up pretty early in the morning still. That's the time that I spend alone with God. That's the time where I read my Bible. That's where I pray. You know, and even now, there's been a few times where Nicole's tried to intrude on that time. And I have to tell you, I'm a little bit testy with her. When it does, I flat out tell her, I was like, Nicole, what are you doing up? You know this is my time with the Lord. Now, I'm pretty sure that if it was for any other reason that I rejected her like that, she would feel very hurt. But she recognizes how important that is to me. Not only that, but how important it is to her. She knows who I can become when I miss out on that time. So not only does she accept it, she also encourages it greatly. You know, I've heard it said that anything that draws you closer to God is a blessing. I found that to be true. But I also know the decisions that we make and the way that we respond will determine whether we're blessed or whether we're cursed. Difficult trials and time in the cave can be a time where we draw nearer to God. It can cause us to grow in our relationship with Him. And if you do, I promise you, you will be blessed. But you know what? God's not the only one who comes to the cave, who comes to visit us. Cora, would you read for me John 10:10?
The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life.
Jesus intends to give you a rich and satisfying life in relationship with Him. But the devil, the thief, he would steal your blessing. Satan would try to use those same trials to drive a wedge between you and God. I promise you, guys, Satan will come and visit. He will come to the cave. He will come sowing the seeds of resentment, doubts about God, discouragement, despair, and even distraction. Those difficult times which lie ahead can be a blessing, or they can be a curse. Well, that will depend on how you respond. Cora, read for me James 4, verses 7 and 8.
So humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world.
You can choose to listen to the devil, but keep in mind that he wants to destroy you. Or you can resist listening to the lies. You can instead draw near to God, and you will be blessed. He will bless you. Go read Philippians 4, 7.
Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus.
See, one of the blessings that God gives us is He gives us a special peace. It's a peace that, unless you know God intimately, you'll never really be able to understand it. But it will indeed make you unshakable in times of great problems and great troubles. Cora, read for me Psalm 62:2. That's actually our memory verse of the week.
He alone is my rock and my salvation, my fortress where I will never be shaken.
Because when I make God alone my rock, when He becomes the foundation of my life, I will never be shaken by changing circumstances. Because, guys, we know that circumstances change. Our situation changes. Even the people that we are in association with will change. But let's read Hebrews 13:8.
Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever.
In a changing world, in changing times, only God is unchanging. Guys, when I put my faith and trust in people, or I put my faith and my trust in things, I really put myself and my life at risk of coming apart. That's why Jesus speaks to us. It's in Matthew chapter 7, beginning with verse 24. Cora?
Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes to torrents, and the floodwaters rise, and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it is built on the bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand.
Jesus says, if you come to me and you build your life, your foundation, on my firm foundation, it will never collapse in the storms of life. But if you build that foundation on anything else, it's like building your house on sand, and it will be swept away by the storms to come. Okay, so in the coming weeks, it could be a time of building and growing relationships, relationships with God and with your family, or it can be a time of growing despair. And that's going to be kind of up to you. It's going to depend on how you spend your time and what you end up doing. You can spend your time listening to the lies of Satan and how terrible things are going to be. Or you can choose to be blessed by spending time with your God, who promises to be with you and see you through. And that's up to us. So guys, we're going to take communion in just a second. And guys, as we always do, We're going to spend just a little bit of time in reflection before we do that. In fact, the scriptures tell us to not take communion lightly, but to think about what it is that we're taking. Okay? And the thing is, Jesus demonstrated by going to the cross that he was indeed our very best friend. And we're told, what greater love is this than one that would lay down his life for his friends? And Jesus did that for us. He did it so that we could become his friends. He did it so that we could come into relationship with God. But so often we look to other things. So often we look to other people to be our rock and our foundation. This may be a time where we need to ask God's forgiveness for that. Because I want you to think about who it is that you first turn to. Very often when guys come to me for ministry, the very first question I'll ask you is, you know, have you prayed about this? What's God say about your situation and your circumstances? And I have to be honest, some guys are like, well, I haven't really prayed about it. Okay, so that's the place where we need to begin. So let's spend just about a minute considering what it is that we have, what a friend we have in Jesus, and what that relationship should look like.